Okay, we're in the middle of our series, Doing Church, and last time we looked at the loving church and discovered that the preeminent characteristic of the church of Jesus Christ is to be love. But it's a love that reaches beyond simply love one another. We're to go further, aren't we? Jesus says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another." Well, that's the old commandment, so what's the newness of the new? "As I have loved you, that you also love one another." That's the newness of the new. We're to love one another as Christ has loved us. "By this will all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Well, this morning we're going to continue on our theme of the loving church. And the title of this morning's message is Learning to Love. And we're going to look at Christ's love for Peter. And from it, learn how we can love one another as Christ has loved us. So we have 2 points this morning. And point number one is this: was it easy to love Peter? What do you think? Was it easy to love him? Now, when you read the gospel accounts, it's difficult not to like Peter. Now, there used to be a children's cartoon called The Big Knights. Anyone remember that? Anyone know that? No, lots of blank faces. Well, I like The Big Knights. It's a good cartoon. Anyway, it begins with this. It says, "The height of two men, the weight of four, the strength of 16, the Big Knights. Sir Boris, finest swordsman in the world. And his brother, Sir Maurice, not the finest swordsman in the world, but the most enthusiastic." Now, rightly or wrongly, that's sometimes how I think of Peter. He's a big man. He may not always be best at things. He may often get things wrong. But certainly for Peter, he's the most enthusiastic. So when Jesus walks on the water, who says, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And Peter, he steps out on the boisterous waves and finds that he's still standing. While lesser men remain within the safety of the boat, Peter steps out, only then to get into difficulties as he takes his eyes off the Lord and looks at the boisterous waves. And then when Jesus is on the shoreline of the Sea of Tiberias after his resurrection, and the disciples, they're in a boat and they're a short distance from the shore, who plunges into the water to be first at Jesus' side? While lesser men remain in the boat, after all, why get wet? The boat's eventually going to come to the shore. Peter takes a drenching just to be near to his Lord. It's difficult, isn't it, not to like Peter? He's big-hearted, passionate, warm. He's very human, the most enthusiastic. But do you think it was easy to love Peter? What do you think? Was he an easy man to love? Number one, was he easy to get close to? Now think about it. He's a working man. We're told about his wife, so he's a married man. He's a big man, and we can say that because when that net comes to the edge of the sea, when they come in from the shore on the Sea of Tiberias after Christ has risen, it's Peter who goes out and pulls the net in. And he's got 153 big fish in it. He's got to be a strong man, hasn't he? He's a big man. And he's from up north. He's from Galilee. And he's a natural leader with a lot to say. And he's a fisherman. And the fishermen I've met, they're tough, resourceful men. And he works with his brother Andrew. It's a family business. So how is Jesus going to break into Peter's world? How is he going to break into that tight circle and cultivate Peter's friendship and more? Until that day he says to Peter, "Follow me and I will make you fishers of men." Do you think it was easy to get to know Peter? Was he easy to love? And number two, Peter likes to have his say. Luke chapter 5, we're told that Jesus has been preaching from Peter's boat. And when he finishes speaking, he says to Peter, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." And what's Peter's response? Peter objects. He complains. He says, "All right, I'll do it. But Lord, I want you to know that I think this is a waste of time. Master, we've toiled all night and caught nothing." Oh, you may be the preacher, but don't forget I am the fisherman. Nevertheless, at your word I will let down the net. So how do you get on with people who always want to have their say first? You ask them something, you tell them something, and before you get any further, they let you know exactly what they think. How easy was he to love? And number three, he always thinks he knows best. Now, after 2 years, Jesus opens his heart to his disciples. He tells them that he must go to Jerusalem to suffer and bleed and die. He says, "This is why I've come. We've come to the marrow of the incarnation. It's an awesome, solemn moment. The Christ must go up to Jerusalem to die." Now, what's Peter's reaction? Matthew tells us, "Then Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you. Lord, you've got it wrong. Lord, you don't know what you're talking about. Lord, you've misunderstood your calling.'" And you think, well, Peter, you've not taken in a word. You've not heard a word that Jesus has been saying to you, but that doesn't stop you from stepping in and putting the Son of God right. And worse, because as we know, he's become Satan's mouthpiece. And he lays a stumbling block before Jesus. And such is the temptation that Jesus has to say to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offence to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Now, how do you get on with people who never listen? Who don't know what they're talking about? Who take it upon themselves to rebuke you when they haven't a clue what they're saying? Who always think they know best. How do you get on with such people? Was it easy to love Peter? And number four, talking. Peter doesn't know when to stop. Now, it's interesting, if you read the Gospels, that of the disciples, so often it's Peter who is first to speak. Okay, fair enough, he's a leader amongst them. But sometimes he doesn't know when to stop. So on the Mount of Transfiguration, an extraordinary moment, the veil is removed, and we see Jesus. He looks like who he is. He looks like the King. He looks like the Son of God. Think of it, his face is shining like the brightness of the sun. His clothes white, like light, dazzling. There's like flashes of lightning going through his clothing. He dazzles with a heavenly brilliance. And Peter witnesses the glory. Now you think, surely this is a moment for awe and wonder and silence. But what does Peter do? He can't stop talking. And actually, he's talking rubbish. And Mark's comment is, because he didn't know what to say. How do you get on with people who don't know what to say, have nothing useful to say, and yet won't shut up? They won't stop talking. Was it easy to love Peter? And number five, Peter feels sorry for himself. As Peter watches, a rich young ruler, a rich young man, is offered a choice by Jesus between keeping his money and following Jesus. He decides to keep his money. What's Peter's response? Well, he draws the contrast. He says, "See, we have left all and followed you. Therefore, what shall we have? Lord, we've given up all for you." So have we done the right thing? What about us? How do you respond to people whose first thought is themselves? Was it easy to love Peter? And number six, Peter is boastful, self-confident. Look at the reading which we had, Luke 22. And verse 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. Now, is Peter listening? No. Does he recognize the danger that he's in? No. Has he taken to heart that Satan himself will test him? That Satan will put him in his sieve and give the sieve a really hard shake to try and shake Peter's faith out of him? Does he realize that that's what's going on? No. All he knows is, Peter, whatever anyone else might be doing, it won't be me who lets you down. Verse 33. But he said, so he's contradicting now, but he said to him, Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Then Jesus said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. Well, is Peter listening now? You think, well, after that? No. Because Matthew records Peter's next words, and his next words are, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. In fact, John records that Peter goes on to say, I will lay down my life for your sake. Can you imagine it? Peter saying, I'm going to lay down my life for your sake. But of course, it won't be Peter who lays down his life, will it? Was he an easy man to love? And number 7, Peter lets Jesus down. We move from the denial to Gethsemane, where Jesus says to Peter, James, and John, and Matthew records it. He says, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me." Says Jesus to his three best friends, "Don't leave me alone. Whatever you do, don't leave me." And you can look at the language which Jesus uses in the Gospels and the whole sense of what's going on. Jesus is horrified. He's terrified. That's why he says, "Don't leave me." And he has good reason to be, because he's got to drink the cup of God's wrath, the red spiced wine of God's outpoured judgment upon the sinner. It's the ultimate nightmare, isn't it? And everything inside of Jesus screams out saying, "No, not that. Anything but that. Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." So he wants his best friends to be there for him. Can you identify with that? You've had to go through something. None of us have our Gethsemane moments. We can never talk in those terms. But you've had to go through something, and it's been terrifying you. You might say, "It's freaking me out." And you want people to be there with you. You want your best friends to be at your side. Well, what of Peter? What do we read? Then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping, and said to Peter, "What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour?" How hard that must have been for Jesus. Peter, was it too much to ask? Just 1 hour. At my point of greatest need, just for you to be here with me for 1 hour. Was it too much to ask, Peter? Do you see, when Jesus needed him most, Peter lets him down. Do you think it was easy to love Peter? And then number 8, Peter does the wrong thing. In Gethsemane, Judas arrives with this great multitude. They're armed with swords and clubs. They've come to arrest Jesus. So what does Peter do? Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" So Peter's not there when he's needed, but now he's here, as it were, when he's not needed. Why did Peter draw the sword? It's because he's been stung by Jesus' words. "Peter, before the night's out, you'll deny me 3 times. He's been brooding over that. Deny you? Lord, me, Peter, deny you? The others may deny you, but I won't deny you. I'll never deny you. And now with the arrival of this armed crowd, Peter seizes his chance. His moment has come. Lord, I'll show you. I'll show you that you were wrong about me. I'll show you that I'm ready to lay down my life for you. One minute he can't be relied upon. The next, to make a point, he does the wrong thing. It only makes the situation worse. Is it easy to love a man like that? And then, number 9, Peter denies Jesus. Let's just let the narrative speak for itself. Luke 22, verse 54. Having arrested him, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house, but Peter followed at a distance. Now when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as they sat by the fire, looking intently at him, said, "This man was also with him." So she's staring at him. But he denied him, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." And after a little while, another saw him and said, "You also are one of them." Peter said to him, "Man, I am not." Then after an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed. Peter's put on the spot again, saying, "Surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you are saying." Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. Mark puts it even more forcefully. He says, "Then Peter began to curse and swear, 'I do not know this man.'" Lord, I'll lay down my life for your sake. And now he's calling down curses and oaths and saying, "I do not know this man." Christian friends, brothers and sisters, how would you respond to a best friend who, to save their skin, denies that they even know you? Was it easy to love a coward? To love a coward like Peter? And number 10, we move beyond the cross. We come to a meeting with the resurrected Christ. It's spoken about in John 21, where Jesus charges Peter with the care of his church. Says to Peter, "You're to feed my lambs, you're to tend my sheep, you're to feed my sheep." And then he tells him that as an old man, he's going to be martyred. Now it's solemn, spellbinding stuff. If I had an interview with the Lord Jesus Christ, who was mapping out for me the next years of my life and what would happen and what my commission would be, I would be awestruck, or so we would think. And it takes on a greater significance, doesn't it, when we remember that Peter has just been restored. And Jesus rounds up everything he says by saying to Peter, "Follow me." But what's Peter's response? To stand in humble silence? That having just been restored, to be given such a charge to watch over the flock of Christ? Does Peter stop and pray? Maybe Peter stops and thinks, "Well, Lord, I can't take it all in," and ask for some clarification. Is that what Peter does? No. What Peter does is this. He says, "Okay, well, that's what happens to me. But Lord, what about John? But Lord, what about this man?" He's really moved on beyond Peter. "Well, what about what's happening to John?" And the Lord has to rebuke Peter and say, "Peter, what is that to you? You follow me." Not content with knowing about his own responsibilities and his own future, Peter now wants to organise what's going on in John's life, or at least nose into John's life and find out, well, what's going to happen to him. Do you know people like that? Never mind what they're supposed to be doing. They're too busy finding out what other people should be doing, and usually interfering. So do you think it was easy to love Peter? Is he an easy man to love? Think about it. Number one, was he easy to get close to? How do you get on with people who like to have their say? A man who thinks he knows best, even when he doesn't know what he's saying, and takes it upon himself to rebuke the Son of God and in the process become the mouthpiece of Satan. And number four, a man who doesn't know when to stop talking. And number five, a man whose first thought is himself. And number six, someone who's proud, self-confident, boastful. Who number seven, lets you down when you need him most. Who number eight, to make a point, does the wrong thing and only makes things worse. Who number nine, to save his skin, denies even that he knows you. And number ten, who's too busy sticking his nose into other people's business and sorting out his own life. That's Peter. Is he easy to love? Have you met any of that in the church here? Have you met anyone like that in the last few months, in the last few weeks, in the last few days? And what's been your response? Have you loved your brother and sister as Christ has loved you, as Christ loved Peter? Have you? Or maybe you've given up on them and kept your distance or ignored them or written them off. Peter's not easy to love, and yet Christ does love him. And Christ loves him invincibly, perfectly, wonderfully. In fact, he becomes Jesus' right-hand man. He becomes the first amongst the apostles. He becomes the leader of the church. He becomes the man charged with the care of Christ's sheep. And when I read that, I think, well, it's hope for us all, isn't there? We are to love one another as Christ loved Peter. So point number two. So how did Jesus love him? Well, the first thing to say is, he got to know him, didn't he? What does Peter's willingness to follow Jesus tell you about the friendliness of Jesus? How does Peter win the love of this straight-talking, working man? How does Jesus, as it were, break into that tight family business circle? How does he do it? How does he get into Peter's world? Well, he takes the initiative. Jesus said, if anything's going to happen, it's down to me. And so with Peter, he's warm, friendly, humble, trustworthy, engaging. Jesus makes the effort. I love it when you read in John, he invites Peter's brother, Andrew, back to his place. And Jesus' words are so warm and friendly. They come and meet him and they say, well, where are you staying? He says, oh, come and see, come with me. It's so warm, it's so friendly, it's so inviting. You come back to my place, I'll show you. Jesus engages in conversation. He talks with Peter until that day he says, follow me. And it's not as it were some strange supernatural power that when Jesus says, follow me, Jesus is possessed against his better judgment and can't stop but follow Christ. It's not like that. The reason he can't resist is the call of one he loves and adores. Because Jesus has taken the initiative. He's made the effort. He's broken into Peter's circle. He's cultivated that relationship. He's cultivated his friendship. He's cultivated so much more. So, Christian friends, do you break into the circle? Do you take the initiative? Do you go up and talk to people? Do you try hard to get to know them? Do you invite them back to your home and say, come and see? A friend of mine, he's a teacher. At his old school, they used to have a sweepstake every day to find out which teacher would leave the school first. Because the bell would go at 4 o'clock, and then about 4:05, the cars would be queuing to get out. Come the end of the day, it was always the same teachers who were first out the gate. Duty done, get home. Are you like that? Are you first out the door? Is it a quick, hi, hello, how are you? Duty done, then home. Or maybe you sit in your pew waiting for people to come to you. And you don't move. You wait for people to come to you. Wait for people to take the initiative to you. And maybe you're put out when people don't take the initiative with you. You think, well, who comes and talks to me? Who's made the effort with me? Who seems to be interested in me? But you've never turned it around the other way and think, well, who have I taken the initiative with? Who have I shown an interest with? Who have I been friendly towards? Maybe you complain, there's no one like me. But you've not gone out there to find out if there is anyone like you. Do you always talk to the same people? So maybe come the end of a service, it's always the same people. Always the same circle. Never break into another circle. Never get to know anyone else. Maybe never speak to a visitor. How friendly are you? I know of a London church. They've got a nice new building. It's an attractive building. It's a welcoming building. It's a new building. Invite people in, yes. They've done everything. They've been out door to door, open airing, distributing leaflets. They've done everything they can. And in 18 years, they have never had an outsider into their building. 18 years, they've never had a visitor. Someone coming in cold. And yet God still sends us visitors. He sends us visitors every week. How friendly are we? Do I see it as my responsibility to break into that circle, to get to know them? Come and see. I was saying to a brother. He's new in the UK. Well, he was new in the UK about 6 years ago. New to London. And when he was new to the UK, new to London, he visited a church. And someone in that church, he said, actually, the church as a whole wasn't that welcoming. But there was someone in that church who was so friendly, who took such an interest in him, who said, I'll show you London. I'll help you to settle in. That it made a huge difference for him. But would that happen here? What sort of effort do we make with each other? How much effort do we make to break into other circles, to cultivate friendships, to get to know them? How much effort do we make with visitors? What does it say in Proverbs? He who would have friends must himself be friendly. Maybe you think, well, I haven't got any friends. Yes, but are you friendly? God's word says, if you want friends, be friendly. If you haven't got friends, it's because you're not friendly. I know, it's always... But we must stop ourselves thinking that someone else ought to be doing something. The Bible says, what should you be doing? And it's not an issue of personality. We're all shy. We all find it difficult. We all find sometimes our heart pattering away. The issue is one of Christ-likeness. Christ is a single man. He goes to a well-established group, a tight circle, and he gets into that circle. Because he himself takes the responsibility. He himself is friendly. He himself makes the effort. It's not about personality, it's about Christ-likeness. Do you see what we're saying? You can't love people unless you take the first step, can you? Unless you put yourself out. Unless you cross the floor. Unless you go and get to know them. How friendly are you? Number two, how did Jesus love Peter? He protected him with his prayers. We're told, aren't we? The Lord says to him, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. Solemn stuff, isn't it? Peter's going astray. He's under satanic attack. And that sense, Satan has asked you that he may sift you as wheat. The sense of it is that, Peter, you're going to be taken apart. That's what it means. The sifting is, you're going to be taken apart, Peter. And we know that. He's going to fall horribly. So what's Jesus' response to this coming horrible fall where Satan's going to take Peter apart? Does he write Peter off? Does he tell Peter how stupid you are because you don't ever listen to me? Does he tut-tut and raise his eyes to heaven? Does he go around and tell everyone else the state that Peter's in and what Peter's going to do? Does he rubbish Peter? Does he gossip about him? Do we ever do any of those things? What does he do? He comes to Peter's defense. That I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. He prays for Peter. that any wrongdoing on Peter's part will only be temporary, and that far from destroying Peter, it will strengthen him in the service of the king. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. So, Christian friend, what do you do when you witness a brother or sister who is in spiritual difficulty? What do you do when they won't listen? What do you do when they're out on a limb? When they're at a distance from the warmth and life of the church? Do you pray for them? Do you defend them with your intercession? Do you cry to God for their restoration and their continued usefulness? What do you do? Maybe just notice that they're doing it and get on with the rest of your life. Loving one another as Christ loved us and praying for one another, those things go hand in hand, don't they? We believe the Bible. Number three. How did Jesus love Peter? He came to his defense. In Gethsemane, Jesus, at his point of greatest need, as we've seen, is let down by Peter. He returns to find him sleeping. Now, as you said, that must have been a bitter experience. Have you ever been let down by somebody? I mean, really let down. You needed them most and they weren't there. How did you respond? Did you feel bitter? Did you feel sorry for yourself? How does Jesus respond? Does he feel sorry for himself? Is he bitter? Does he tear Peter off a strip? Does he walk away in disgust? No, he speaks to Peter gently. He says to him, "Simon, are you sleeping? Could you not watch 1 hour?" That's a very gentle rebuke, isn't it? Those words fall softly. There's a lovely gentleness there. And then he expresses concern for Peter's welfare. He says, "Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation." And then he comes to Peter's defense. He says, "The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Jesus puts the best construction on the situation. He gives to Peter the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't look for the worst motive. He looks for the best. He says to Peter, "Oh, Peter, you were willing. You were willing. But the flesh is weak." So, Christian friend, when believers let you down, do you project onto them the worst motive? And you think, "Well, how could you do that?" Or do you project onto them the best motive, the best you can find, because that's the Christ-like thing to do? You see, when other people let you down, it's not just a window into their heart. It's also a window into yours. It's how you will respond. It's whether you will look at them and find the worst possible motive for the wrong that they do, or whether you will actually look for the best motive. You'll actually think the best of them. You'll actually take their side against yourself, whether or not you'll give them the benefit of the doubt, even if your better judgment may think otherwise. But you'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Somebody put it like this. He says, "To love what is good in all men, and to love all men when they are not good." And that's what Jesus does, doesn't he? He loves Peter. He loves him. He feels it. "Oh, Peter, I know, but you were willing." Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. That you love one another as I have loved you. Nearly at the end. Number four. How did Jesus love Peter? And I think this is one of the most wonderful of all. He doesn't turn away. Luke 22, to save his skin, Peter denies Jesus 3 times. What's Jesus' response? What would be your response? What has been your response to those who've wronged you? Do you burn with anger? Do you look away in disgust? Or maybe when you see them, you look straight through them. What does Jesus do? And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times." So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Don't you love those words? And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. He looked at Peter. Where I would have just turned away. I can't look at you. You've denied me. And I warned you and I told you. You've denied me to save your own skin. I'm not looking at you. Christ turns and he looks at him. Don't you find that extraordinary? He looks at him. And it's a look of love. It's a look that penetrates the surface. It's a look that says, oh, Peter. Peter, my friend. And I wonder what flashed through Peter's mind in that moment. I wonder what flashed through his mind, the healing of his mother-in-law, when he was walking on the water and Jesus reaching out his hand and saving him and rescuing him. What did go through Peter's mind? All those times when he'd known only from Christ such wonderful love, which he now repays with this cowardly denial. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. It's a look of invincible love, and it breaks Peter's heart. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. So Christian friend, those who wrong you, are they safe in your hands? How do you look at them? Is it a look of love? And to close, number 5. How did Jesus love Peter? He restores him, doesn't he? On that morning by the Sea of Tiberias. Don't you love the preparations that Jesus makes? The disciples, they've toiled all night and they've caught nothing. And they're cold and they're wet and they're tired and they're hungry. If you know anything about men, hungry men, tired men, cold men, men who've got all wet and what they've done has turned out to be nothing but failure. You know what men are like in those situations, don't you? They're a miserable lot. But as they reach the shore, what are they greeted by? Jesus has made a fire. Isn't that lovely? A fire they can come and they can gather around and warm themselves. And then they look and there's barbecue fish. It's a lovely breakfast that's being prepared. Jesus understands people, doesn't he? Perfectly. And the initiative is all his. And only after Peter has eaten, because only after he's eaten now he's ready to hear, Jesus asks his 3 questions to wipe away the stain of Peter's 3 denials. And what does Jesus want to know? Peter, are you sorry? You know, Peter, when you said this, did you mean this? Peter, are you going to put things right? Peter, it's going to be a long, long, long time before ever this relationship's going to be right. Peter, this only I want to know. Do you love me? Do you love me? Jesus, the initiative is all his. He wants the relationship healed, restored, whole. Peter, I want to hear it. Tell me. Tell me, Peter, that you love me. Because that is at the heart of their relationship. Christian friends, what's at the heart of our relationships? Is love at the heart of our relationships in this church? Is that what we want to hear from one another? I don't know how often do we say it to each other enough? Do we say, brother, sister, I love you? Do we greet each other with a warmth and embrace of a holy kiss? Do we really love one another? Is that what we want at the heart of our relationships? Peter, tell me that you love me. Because that's the heart of everything. Do we talk like that? Do we think like that? Are we prepared to put up with anything less than that? That love should be the heart of our relationships. That love should be the heartbeat of this church. That love should be such that between us, we can't bear for there to be any distance. We won't tolerate it. We won't put up with it. We'll get everything out of the way that we may embrace one another. Peter, tell me that you love me. Brothers and sisters, what's at the heart of our relationships? And how do we respond to spiritual failures? Do we give up on those who've wronged us? Do we bear a grudge? Are we feeling bitter this morning because someone just really let me down? And you know, it was their fault. And they haven't got a leg to stand on. But is that how Christ responds? Is there any bitterness in him? He wants a relationship restored, healed, whole. Don't let what they've done be an excuse for me to show unlove. Is that what Jesus does? That you may love one another as I have loved you. Do you see? Jesus has not yet finished with Peter. Unstable Simon is to become Peter the Rock. And if you read 1 Peter, you'll see how often Peter refers to love and the need for God's people to love one another and for that love to be a fervent love. Peter, where did you learn that? I learned it from the Master, from his love towards me. So, Christian friends, how can we give up on one another when Christ hasn't finished with any of us yet? Learning to love.